Movies exploring VR like Minority Report or The Final Cut ran effective pre-publicity for Apple's recent product announcement, Vision Pro, a headset that lets us put our faces into spaces generated by computer. Hollywood has primed us so thoroughly on what to expect and what to worry about that it's a big ask for the Vision Pro promo video to leave its mark on this cinematech of dystopian data spaces. But it had a go. Culturefile watched with our tech soothsayer Professor Aisling Kelleher to assess the teaser to end all teasers. So Apple have released this thing, but they haven't. They've only released word of this thing, Aisling. What is this thing?
The thing has been announced, and then we have 7 months or so to kind of come to terms with the fact that the thing costs $3,500. That's what you have to kind of think about.
Feels a bit like a pregnancy, like they've waited a couple of months to announce it, and now, like, with 7 months to go, they're telling us, yep, it's going to be a spatial computing headset.
I'm not sure if the analogy works.
Thank you.
Of the child, I kind of know maybe what to do with a baby, but and I'll probably realize it's a lifetime commitment. Not so sure with this that I'm going to be like, well, this is a 24/7 thing for me now. Yes, they're very interested in owning this new space that's about spatial computing, about being in your physical space and in your digital space simultaneously. Not quite talking about it as a virtual reality or even an augmented reality piece of technology. But really, it's a way to bring your screens, all your screens, into your physical space. So you can work, you can look at pictures, you can be entertained. Right now, only by yourself doesn't seem to be a shared experience, which is maybe what we might normally think of when we watch a movie at home with our family. But it's a very technically dazzling, or as their video says, jaw-dropping. Apple never undersell, you know, so that's their way of telling you that both you need it and you want it, and it is amazing.
They use this new term, spatial computing, and say that they have a spatial operating system. And as you point out, they also avoid things like saying virtual reality or VR or AR. So they want to really claim that this is a new area that they're staking out for themselves, and certainly not anything like Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse or any of the kind of existing VR platforms that we might know. How new is what they're promising?
It's both new and it's both completely not new. I mean, really what you're doing is strapping a computer to your face, right? So that's what we're doing. And now I can, you know, sign my PDFs, right, with wearing my goggles as opposed to sitting at my computer. I think some of the things why they're talking about as spatial computing, the idea here and one of the things that they're really trying to work on is the legibility, for example, of text in this virtual space. And that's always been a little bit challenging, particularly with documents or spreadsheets or anything like that. And I think the heaps of engineering technology that they've thrown at this enables them to place documents in three-dimensional spaces, which you can imagine would be kind of useful if you're doing a lot of data analysis or anything like that, or if you're like me and you have 250 tabs open in your browser. To be able to sort them in a different way could allow for a different level of efficiency at work, is one way of thinking about this three-dimensional spacing of the documents on your computer.
Actually, you don't see your eyes. You see what they've created, a kind of avatar of your eyes becomes...
Oh, don't say avatar. They don't want you to say avatar.
Okay. So yes. What are they calling it?
It's a persona.
A persona. So Other people are seeing a persona, which is a digital rendering of your eyes, and that becomes you that people who are standing in the room while you're wearing this device talk to and see winking at them.
Yeah, and that's totally natural, right? my persona. I mean, I think this is definitely one area where they're going to need to do a little bit of work on that, because some of the renderings where they're showing a person wearing the headset doing FaceTime with two other people who are, it seems in the video anyway, that they're not wearing the headsets. But then they do show you as well what you would look like if you were rendered, you know, two other people to see it. And it's a... kind of an uncanny valley mimicry of you. And I understand why they don't want to call it an avatar. They're trying to say it is you, isn't it? And you're like, no, it's not me. It doesn't quite capture, you know, my bizarre expressions that I'm coming up with. So I think that's going to take a little bit of work.
The scene you're talking about where she's on FaceTime with two other people, I thought that would seem to indicate that, you know, where this whole paradigm is breaking down, because she's having, you know, a video call with a couple of other people, which she could do on a screen very nicely and easily, and they could see her. And instead of that, what they're seeing is a visual, you know, is this kind of persona of her that isn't really the person who's speaking. And that seems like, well, that's you've inserted a persona there very unnecessarily, when these people might more easily all look at each other via the screen.
I'm not buying that yet. But I mean, I think it could be compelling. I was trying to think of, like, what are the use cases for this? Because as with kind of many Apple things, like even when they came out with the iPhone first, you know, and people were like, oh, and I, as a massive BlackBerry user, was horrified at the lack of the tactility of the keyboard. But, and they didn't have the App Store then, so it was still kind of like, what is this tiny computer in my hand that takes photos as well? You know, and obviously they've built a whole ecosystem around it. So I can imagine, yes, right now it's your computer. But I like the idea of, maybe if I wanted to think about redesigning or redecorating my home or my space, being able to imagine and visualize the space and add components to it while wearing the headset. The other use case that I was reading, many different people were pointing out, if you have a very small office or a very cluttered environment in your home, or just, you know, you don't have these enormous vistas for working in, this could be a very kind of welcoming new office environment that takes up very, very little space, but allows you to have 50 monitors, right, as opposed to two monitors, and in all sorts of ways that you can kind of use your, you know, the visual plane in front of you and make it very, very large, or seemingly large, because that's what you are seeing. As we said, I mentioned earlier, this is not a shared vision. Right, so that sense of, like, if we're sitting together or in a space, how am I going to collaborate with other people or move things from, you know, like Minority Report? Can I move things from my visual plane to your visual plane so we can look at them together? I think that will be a very interesting development in terms of distance collaboration, particularly around things like, say, architecture or interior design, or even any form of deep data visualization, where multiple people are trying to look at and understand and discuss complex data sets.
We've seen this coming down the line for a while now. Is there any research to say that if you were looking at a room that seemed kind of spacious and gave you a lot of visual freedom, that in any way feels to humans like being in a big space? Like, is it as comfortable, and does it fulfill any of the needs of space?
Well, kind of. I recently had an experience here. There's a VR, AR, like, arcade for adults where you can, I don't know if it's a good combination, but where you can go and, like, drink alcohol and have crazy VR experiences. And considering that VR and AR can make you feel very seasick, or it has made me feel very odd, it's probably not a great combination. But I did try a game, and these games are expensive to play. They're like $25 to just have that experience, that you feel like you're in a raft and you're with four other people, but you have to wear so much gear. They put a backpack on you and then they cover up the headset, but you can see things underneath you and on top of you, and you can pick up, of course it's all weapons based, but it, when you walk in space, it's like a small black room. And you do have the experience, particularly if you can see things above you and below you, and you can see the other people as well. They're represented as avatars. It does kind of create this very interesting immersive environment, but a lot of it is, you know, dependent on the massive amount of work that went into, you know, rendering this very kind of crazy world that you're in. But it's a one-off experience. Like, you do that once and you're like, oh, that was cool. Great. You know, it's like a it's like, you know, panic room, right? You know, something like that. So trying to think of this as what Apple are coming up with, this is going to be a consumer product for the home. I'm like, well, I think that the killer app for it might be more in specialized domains. I think like maybe it would be really nice if you were in hospital for a long time, or if you were an older person might really enjoy this if they're in a senior or assisted living facility where you can kind of have your own experience away from everybody else in many ways, that down the line, this could be the way things are going.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think that's interesting because, you know, the real world would want to be a lot uglier before you would want to live in these spaces. But having your world really restricted by your own ability to move actually, you know, does take some of the gloss off that. And so I wonder, is this going to be a real compensation for people who have major mobility issues, that it can fulfill some of the needs of getting into space, getting outside?
Yeah, I think for that could be a way that allows people to, especially if you're limited in using your limbs, I think it could be a kind of a fascinating experience. Or even just, I was thinking, like, the experience of being on a plane. These days, it's not a pleasant experience. It's not the wonderful, glamorous experiences of the 50s. I think maybe you see more and more people wearing noise-cancelling headsets because they just want to at least drown out the sound of the plane for long-haul flights. But if you could put something on like that and kind of mellow out in your own completely different world, that could be a really interesting kind of short-term experience as well. The challenge, I think, is because of the overt focus on the visual experience of that, they still haven't solved quite yet the issue of people with prescription, especially unusual prescription glasses or varying levels of impairment in their sight. Now, Apple are partnering with the company so that you could get some variant on those lenses. But from what I've been reading online, for the large amount of people out there who require very specific types of prescription lenses, it will be challenging to create a really, really high fidelity, high res experience that fits up to the claim that basically this is like a 4K TV set for your eyes. I think there's going to be a little bit of work to make this as accessible as possible to people who might need it most.
That is one of the things that has sort of been keeping me outside of VR. I have used the Google Cardboard arrangement and tried out a Quest and all those things. But as a glasses wearer, the experience is either, you know, I can have a fuzzy impression, or I can have a kind of light spilling around the edges impression. You know, I can't have sharp and complete.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the experience for me a little bit as well, because I only need glasses for reading. So when I can be in there, I can see the monsters really far away and shoot them, but I can't read the instructions on how to pick up the gun. So it's like, huh, all right. So, which was my experience a few weeks ago. I mean, I believe that's a solvable problem in some ways. And maybe that's why we have the 7 to 9 month lead in, where Apple will just hope others kind of pick up the baton and begin to kind of create lots of things that could be useful in this space. If you think of like when Microsoft came up with like the Xbox and the Kinect, you know, they really only thought of it as a gaming device, as opposed to this is a really interesting sensor that can see, you know, a human skeleton in three-dimensional space. And you can do all sorts of things with that if you open up that ecosystem. So I think the same thing might be with this, particularly as they're clearly going to create if there's a pro version, which they're coming out with now, they'll probably have a not so pro version. Or if I think of like all the fancy iPhones, and I have my iPhone SE, which is like for the cheapskates amongst us, I'm like, what will the cheapskate SE version of this be? You know, maybe you just had a bit of duct tape to get it to stick to your face, but
well, that is might, what the cardboard
yeah
was,
that's what the, essentially what the cardboard was, so you get a version of it. But I don't like the idea of like, is this something that you'd wear all day? Like if I work all day and I'm working with screens a lot or moving things around and are moving between zooming and looking at data, writing some code, I don't know if I want to have a, I mean, it's only weighs a pound, but that's still on your head, and it's a computer on your head, so it's going to get warm, I can imagine. And you have to carry the battery in the little video. The guy like slips it into his pocket, but like, I'm a woman, and should they don't put pockets on anything for us to wear. So I'll be walking around with that, and I can just imagine myself being yanked constantly because I forget about it, that it's, you know. So in the video as well, you don't see people. I'm like, are you going to go outside with that on, like, or walk down the corridor, or, you know, go to the toilet? Yeah. I don't know, like, or I wouldn't want to sit in a coffee shop with that. Like, unless, will it become normal or normative, or will it be the way that the Google Glass wears, like, people had kind of a virulent and occasionally violent reaction to that sense of this invasion of privacy, because it can take video and 3D video as well, or pictures. And how is that, you know, a consent issue navigated and negotiated when you're wearing a very expensive piece of equipment?
One of the features that they advertise, that it will take these sort of 3D memory videos, which the uptake of it is kind of a frightening idea, that we would sort of swallow a lot of these things. But it will take a 3D memory video that you will experience in the first place, and then replay in exactly the same fashion. So there will be no difference between you watching the memory and having the memory. And that seems to open up a big area of problems.
Yeah, because it's very, again, Minority Report, you know, where the Tom Cruise character is looking back over, you know, his...
Everything's Minority Report to
you. It is. It's just, you know, that's it. It begins and starts there. And even in the video, there's something almost sad about it. You're like, why is this man alone? Are they his children? Are they alive? Because I think of, like, I have hundreds of gigabytes of things, of videos and images and all sorts of things of my children. And I don't know how often I go back and look at them. Every now and then, like, I'm like, oh, I have to make the holiday card, I better get a few pictures out. But it's more in the moment, we exchange them a little bit, maybe send them in the WhatsApp group, and then you move on. Right. So the challenge with all this stuff is organizing it and finding it. And you know, and there's lots of neat little ways that you do that. But I don't know, it seems very melancholic in the video as presented. And again, because it's not a shared experience, like, there's something so lovely. Like, recently I was sitting with children. We were looking over all their kind of memory books from daycare. And there's something really nice about sitting together and doing that, and doing it in a physical way. So I think there's going to... that sense of the sharing of those videos, the selection, the curating of it as well, will be an interesting... I'm sure we could just say, I should just throw AI at it. Artificial intelligence will solve everything.
It's funny you should say melancholic. One of the Twitter wags was saying, you know, films about cops whose wife was shot are really going to have a boon here, because you can see the film of somebody sitting slightly melancholically going over their Vision Pro memories of their life with their wife before she was cruelly taken from them. Sadness is really pervading the promotional material, whether that's accidental or intentional, I have no idea.
Yeah, it reminds me as well of the movie The Final Cut, which is Robin Williams is in that, and it has this idea that you, in utero, you get a chip embedded in your brain and records everything. And then there's people who are called the cutters who edit it all together. So they get to look at all the footage. And it was both melancholic and also kind of really beautiful to look at a life's worth of memories of, like, all the things you say, like, you've eaten, or, you know, just all the different things that people do, and then select what is significant. And how does the machine help you do that? And in that movie, there's some beautiful pieces where the chip clearly has a malfunction and it slips into imagination. So, like, somebody's swinging on a swing, and then they just clearly in their imagination go up flying off into the sky. And that's what the chip recorded. So those kind of flights of fantasy are really beautiful, to imagine that there's both the reality that's captured and the imaginary experience that kind of went alongside with it. You know, that kind of escapist fantasy is not what Apple are selling, but it could do something.
They do kind of hint, though, that the promise here is for cinema, that there will be a new kind of cinema that this spatial computing will allow.
Well, yeah, given that, I mean, I'm not sure the movie theatre industry is going to be too jazzed about this, where you're basically saying you can have an IMAX in your home and that this is the future of streaming. And again, is it going to be just be this like solitary experience? Or maybe we'll all go to the drive-in and wear these headsets and sit together in a kind of a strange car park setup. The idea of the screen being really big is interesting because it just fills your visual plane, and especially if you don't want to invest in additional technology, it is rather intriguing. But the idea that you could have four people sitting in a space all watching different movies, giant movies, might be useful if you're in like a shared living environment and don't really care for your roommate's taste in the Fast and Furious franchise, which, you know, there's a lot of them to get through.
There's somewhat of a disconnect between, yes, this would be really good in a flat share, and the fact that it costs, you know, approaching $4,000. It's actually a headset for the super rich. And I mean, they're only going to make 1 million of them to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the price point is extraordinary right now. And part of it is that, does it become this like desirable object for the rich? And then it becomes, you know, it's just another bauble that is, you know, a part of conspicuous consumption. You're like, of course I have one. And people go over to so-and-so's house to try it and to try it on. But whether or not people are going to actually use it consistently, is there a kind of a business purpose for it as well, that companies would invest in it? Because I think this has been a big problem with VR and AR, is the fact that all the different headsets are proprietary, and then the companies keep going out of business, right? Because they just can't sell enough of them. So recently I was at a Smart VR for Rehabilitation conference, and that was one of the things we talked about, is just like the different labs, and they kind of have just these huge like warehouse kind of spaces of headsets and technology that was extremely expensive at the time that they just don't use anymore, right? And you see that as well with like the kind of the pullback from Meta about their metaverse idea, and the idea, the big claim and the kind of the all the hype about the idea of that this is how people will communicate with, you know, avatars with no legs, or and then maybe we have legs. It's just not compelling yet. It's like making cool technology and then hoping that, you know, like in Field of Dreams, that they will come and begin to do something useful with it. Yeah.
I guess the fact that the brand is Apple here is the thing that's helping it along. Because as you say, there have been lots of companies, and say Leap, I think, was one of them,
right,
who kind of were operating in this area and basically have flopped. But maybe they don't have the kind of built-in constituency that an Apple product has, which might be the thing to finally get this over the line and make VR technology, which is what this is. It's interesting to see us lose that word already, but make this spatial technology kind of commonplace.
Well, yeah, I think this is maybe what they're hoping for, is that because it fits with the Apple ecosystem already, so maybe a cheaper version of this, well, you just use your, you know, your Apple earbuds or whatever, so that will cover the spatial sound for you, and perhaps you can, you know, use your iLight mouse or your keyboard as well in conjunction with it. So I can imagine down the line that as this gets a little bit cheaper, it could become compelling for folks who work in a particular way, or people who use, say, several monitors, to reduce that kind of hardware in their physical space and to use the headset in a way that kind of fits with the way they work anyway. As you know, as you said earlier, it's really just screens, right? Like you can just move them around a lot. But maybe it's something that for like an hour or two a day, depending on the task that you're doing, this could be a really useful way to see your information and manipulate it in a way that also supports like memory and cognition, because we remember where things are spatially. Right now, the computer is a little dense in terms of you're like, well, where exactly is it? Like, it's in these folders. That's, you know, the analogy that we still have, as opposed to how we think of memory palaces in general as a, you know, it's a technique that you can use to memorize really large amounts of data, is to visualize it in a house and move through the house and find it there. It could be kind of intriguing in that domain.
I wonder, would you let your children use it? I notice in the video that they never suggest that anyone who isn't an adult would use it. I wonder, will this be an over-21s product? Because it feels like there's something that's cutting off normal development in using this kind of...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at that video going, I wouldn't even let my children sit on the couch. Like, that couch clearly cost like $5,000. I'd be like, absolutely not. Don't touch anything. Right. And if we went over to somebody's house like that, I'd be like, oh, God, no, no, we're just going to stay outside. Right. Like, a 3,500 piece of technology is not something that you put on a kid who then just forgets that they're wearing it and runs and slams into a door or something. So I think, yes, the 21 and up, and also the 21 and rich and up as well.
I suppose, I mean, what I'm thinking of is that you're all the time looking at the real world on a screen with, I believe, a 12 millisecond delay. So you're always a little bit behind reality. And I wonder what that means in terms of kind of developmental psychology, cognitive development. I wonder what is happening there. Is it dangerous?
I don't know whether it could be kind of funny. Like, it's like watching the World Cup games, and here in the States we were like about 9 seconds behind, and while chatting with other people in other parts of the world it was rather funny because, you know, you're like, go, what, oh, you know, because the time delay is a bit odd. But like everything, I think you just get used to it. You know, it's like the motion sickness that you could feel with some forms of fully immersive VR. You can, there are techniques that you can use to try and kind of level off in those as well, so to make the experience more pleasurable. And I think if they really can use the spatialized audio in particular, because, you know, this is how we've evolved to use our sound features, our ears, to know that something scary is coming from behind us, right? We can't see behind us, but we can use, you know, our all of those forms of senses as well. So I think combining those two can allow for, you know, or make up for lapses either in like the relationship between actual reality and represented or perceived reality.
And Apple reality. Ooh. Going to trademark it.
Trademark that.
How are other companies going to respond to this? This is a really big play to invent a whole new sector and make the product that lets you access it. How are Meta or Google or other people who, with an eye on world domination, going to respond to this?
Well, it's a bit of a baller move, you know, to announce it and then tell, you know, let's them react to it for the next 7 months before people get their hands on it. I mean, I think I've seen Zuckerberg kind of say, well, my thing can do all of that as well. Yeah. You're like, okay.
But if you have to hold things in your hands with his thing, don't you?
Yeah, you have to hold things in your hands, and there's like the batteries are heavy and, you know, all sorts of things. I mean, I think what Apple have is the aesthetic of it and the design. It's very clean. It seems quite ergonomic. They seem to have solved a lot of the human factor ideas of how to make it fit on people with varying sizes of craniums and neck strength. So I think there'll be the rush probably will be right now for content to put on that. And because Apple have done a pretty strong job in generating a lot of content and having a lot of media content available, whether through their apps, games, and through kind of traditional broadcast style media, that's something that necessarily the companies like Meta don't have to hand in as compelling a way. So they've kind of combined the two of being like, we have all the stuff for you to look at and play with and interact with, and your computer, and you can do all that. And now it's all tied in. So, I mean, it's kind of the Apple way. That's how they hook you. They're like, oh, it's really easy to have your phone, talk to your iPad, talk to the computer, talk to, you know, your hands-free device, talk to your system in your house that opens your door. That kind of seamlessness is what they're getting at when they mean like spatial computing, that idea of it will be seamless between how you want to access your digital files and your ability to navigate the real world also.
Me, I think I would get one. Like if at the moment it became available to me, I think I would do it. But like for curiosity, I don't think that's going to make my life better or anything. It's going to make my life worse, I would have thought, but different.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, it's like all these things. You just look stupid wearing them.
But you're on your own, so.
You're on your own, yeah. So that's what I'm like. I mean, they have solved the problem. Like, I hate the VR ones. I'm like, if I'm on my own and somebody comes into my house to murder me, like, at least if I have the other one, you know, I can, at least I could see through my goggles I'm about to be murdered. And I could film my own murder. And that would be great. Actually, that's a part of the final cut, that's one of the things. This guy witnesses a murder. And then they want to get the chip.
My seminal VR film is Brainstorm. Do you know that?
Oh,
have you seen
that,
Brainstorm?
No. Is it good or bad? Oh,
I think it's good. Like, I haven't seen it in many years, but I did watch it a few times when it came out. It's got Natalie Wood in it.
Oh.
And it's about a kind of like total experience VR headset.
Okay.
And so it's kind of works through all the kind of corruptions of what you might do. Like somebody starts using it for porn
straight away,
and it becomes the David Foster Wallace device. You know, he's found dead with this kind of constant humping in his playing through his brain and whatever.
Oh, goodness.
And then they try and I won't give you away the ending, but it's worth a look.
It's worth a look. Okay.
It is to Professor Aisling Kelleher there of USC School of Cinematic Arts, talking to us from Los Angeles.